Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to talk about being wrong. You know what? We aren't often wrong, I know this, but sometimes we are. Sometimes we've kind of thought something that didn't turn out to be true, or didn't turn out to be the right thing to do, right? Sometimes we're wrong. So let's start out with one of our general questions so we see where we'd like to discuss, see where this discussion takes us, because, of course, this is unscripted. So within our context, as leaders, which is what we are, what have we been wrong about with some frequency? Yeah, what have we been wrong about, and what should we do about it? The first thing, of course, is really to admit that we were wrong, if that's appropriate, right? Yeah. But what should we do about it? How should we remedy it? And what have we often been wrong about? Oh, I see there's lots of people. Thank you so much for being here and for all of your participation. I think that the first topic we're going to talk about, because lots of people are talking about it, is we're wrong about the complexity of the issues. Yeah, that's what I'm going to call it. The complexity of the issues. When we went in, it seemed, well, this isn't going to take very long. It's not very hard, and this is pretty straightforward. But when we got into it, we really did some research. We really dealt with our people. We found out, oops, this is more complex than it seemed. Wow, this is going to be interesting, right? Yeah. So the complexity of the issues. To go along with that, this is true. A lot of people are talking about the amount of time that we estimated that it was going to take to complete the process. The amount of time that it's going to take, right? How long until this stage at least is completed, right? And a lot of times we do make a, as I always call it, about how long when we are brought in. Because I'm going to call him or her our employer, or corporation, sometimes my employer, because a lot of times they want to know, how long is this going to take? Well, the answer is as long as it takes. But the real answer, of course, is, well, we're going to go as fast as we can, and sometimes they want an actual estimate. It's a little tricky. Sometimes I'm wrong, right? This is a good topic, too, that we see more often than I care to admit. I'm going to call it sincerity. People are calling it honesty. People are calling it willingness. The sincerity of a necessary... How about the sincerity of our participants? How about the sincerity of leaders, right? Especially maybe the leader that brought us in, the sincerity. We could be wrong about that. How about wrong about the sincerity of public figures, right? Especially politicians who kind of, well, they're not sincere on any level, really. They just go where they think that they'll get the most publicity and the most votes. And how about sincerity of media members, right? Yeah. Whether or not they're truly giving an unbiased opinion or they have some sort of an agenda. So sincerity of these different groups that we're going to come in contact with. Wrong about the efficiency of assistance, right? People were talking about all kinds of assistants that didn't quite work out. Yeah. Wrong about how efficient they would be. Yeah. How maybe devoted, how long they'd be there. Yes. You know, I'm going to do something that I hardly ever do. I'm going to make air quotations. Anybody ever see anybody do that? They say a word and then they make little quotation marks in the air. Wrong about the fact. And the word "the facts" is in quotation marks, right? Because they turned out to kind of not be facts, and we thought they were. Oops. And I think it's our last topic because we are going to have lots to talk about with these. Our last topic, but it's an important one too, wrong about the expertise of the experts. Brought somebody in and, I'm not so sure about that, right? Wrong about the expertise of experts. Yeah, I see that a lot of you have had that kind of an experience. It's kind of like, I don't think so. Yeah. So let's get started. Our first one is wrong about the complexity of the issues. This happens a lot, especially when you have experience in a field. And it seems like, oh, same old, we can handle that. But when it comes down to it, not so much, right? As Helen says, issues occurred during the process that weren't apparent at the beginning. Issues occurred during the process that weren't apparent at the beginning. Yeah. We're going to talk about the sincerity of all kinds of people later on in this show. But sometimes, how shall I put this delicately, you aren't told exactly all of the issues up front because, well, somebody who wants you to come in wants you to make a kind of a small guesstimate about how long it'll take. And they don't want you not to sign on, right? And so sometimes the complexity of the issues is not truly not apparent, as Helen says, but sometimes there's a reason for the lack of understanding, right? Right. But you still, the complexity of the issues is bigger than you thought. And Muhammad says that circumstances sometimes change. Yeah, circumstances change lots. He's talking about outside groups and the group makeup itself. Yes. It's a real good point. Sometimes circumstances change that are beyond our control, but they add to the complexity of the issues. And we should have kind of thought about that when we started. Sometimes the team, the group dynamic changes. And maybe you didn't realize that because nobody told you. And it wasn't apparent, as Helen says. Muhammad says sometimes the group dynamic changes, the group changes, and the outside groups also have an effect. Yes, depending on if it's a contested issue, right, you might have opposition. And that adds to the complexity because they have to be dealt with. You might have other groups that are on your side, but they need to be dealt with anyway. Circumstances change. It's possible that when you start, you're it. And as you go along, other people decide to make their own groups. And people kind of get on the bandwagon and go, yeah, we'd like that too. Let's start up our own. And you get kind of, yeah, Muhammad's calling them splinter groups. Yes and no. It depends if the group dynamic, the group changes, the group makeup changes because people go off to make their own group. I don't usually see that, although I've seen it happen to groups where they're kind of, the idea is really good and people are enthusiastic, but they're not enthusiastic about this specific group, see, and then splinter groups show up. Or else the group gets too large. Yeah. Sometimes it's a good thing. I get brought in a lot when groups have kind of splintered because they need to be brought together. There's only one. They need to work together is what it really is. And the splintering was because of animosity. People didn't think that the group was doing a good job. The leader was doing a good job. This would never happen to you. But you must indeed watch for that and make sure that your participants are really enthusiastic and are really in this group and not making a click that's going to go off and make not exactly an opposing group, because they're on the same side, they want the same thing, but not exactly a group that's working with you either. And they need to work with you. That's sometimes why I'm brought in, to get the groups back together. Right? Right. Sometimes it's fabulous that there's people that go off and make their own group. Yes, it's not always a negative thing. I'm a Rotarian because you guys have, quite a few of you who have been here before. Thank you all for being here. Welcome to everyone, prior and new. And in Rotary, it started out as one group, right? What, 130 years ago or something, long time. And there was a group of businessmen who decided, and they were men, who decided to get together and do good in the world, do something nice, do something for somebody who couldn't really pay them back just because it would be a good thing, right? And then the group grew, and then people heard about it, and then they made different groups in different areas. My personal Rotary Club, personal being the one I belong to, right? I didn't make it, is the fourth oldest in the world on Rotary Clubs. And my club is very big, and we have birthed, so to speak. People have gone off and made really, I don't know how many, I mean just a ton of other clubs in different locations, and some of them more specialized, working on a specialty type ill in the world. And it's fabulous because it means that our reach extends, our reach gets bigger. And then those groups birth other groups. You see, that's why Rotary is so big, and it has actual clubs everywhere in the world. Yeah, I know a lot of you are Rotarians, and a lot of you are not Rotarians in the United States, which is fabulous. And it really, yeah, and your clubs go out and other people that come from your clubs go out and make another Rotary club. They get chartered. Yeah, and it's fabulous. Yeah. And so sometimes it's a good thing because it's a matter of strength and a matter of numbers and a matter of increasing influence. But we've all got the same goal at heart. And in Rotary, and none of it is in competition with anybody else. In fact, Rotary clubs frequently get together with other Rotary clubs to do good things. Yeah, to really work on something. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's as Muhammad says, circumstances change. Right? There's other groups. Other groups from your group, we all need to work together to get the job done. If they're opposition groups, that is indeed add to the complexity of the issues. And we need to really think about what they're doing and what their argument is and how maybe we can even get together and work together on certain aspects at least. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people talking about circumstances changing because you lose funding, or maybe you gain funding, but it has to do with money, with economics. Frequently this happens, that it is, for some reason, the economics has gone either better or worse, but in any event, it is important to note that it makes the issues more complex because we might have to fundraise, right? Yeah, big grant, and may we all do so. If we get a big grant, it might even make some complexity too because we might have to, well, we might have to satisfy the grantor, right? We might have some requirements. We might have to look at what it is that we now can fund and how it reaches into our goal, into our purpose, right? Yeah. So funding and lack of funding, of course, we're going to have to raise some more. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? This is a good point, too. And quite a few people, Thomas and others, are making it. He says some participants or groups make the issues extra complex. Ever deal with people like that? Of course we have. They kind of make things worse. They make a big deal out of a small deal, right? Yeah. And that's where leadership comes in. Because you've got to get your group to go forward. Even if somebody in the group has had to modify their opinion to make consensus, right? And they are not happy. And it is imperative that everybody in a manner that is for the group and not just go off on their own somehow, right? Yeah. And so it is important that you don't allow someone to bully. You don't allow someone to keep pushing some sort of an agenda that we've gone past, right? Yes, this is where the civility rules come into play. Exactly. They're really the only rules the recipe for peace now has. And I'm going to say this, I know a lot of you know this, but there's quite a few new people too. Hello, everybody. The civility rules at their base say we will not be rude to one another. We will take turns speaking. We will listen to everyone with courtesy. We will not just interrupt. And we will go forward as a unified group. Yeah, important stuff, right? Right. And it is extremely important that we all go forward and no one gets stuck on an issue that is resolved and they keep bringing it back up. This is time for a little talk also, right, within the civility rules, because we are models of civility. But that's why we have the timeouts with the food. And the timeouts, we have a chance to maybe have a little conversation with somebody, right? And explain that we need to move forward, right, as a group. Yeah, because sometimes people have kind of a pet peeve, and they are making the issues more complex than they should. Yeah. Let's go on to the next one, which is the time needed to complete the project, time needed to reach our successful outcome. Yes. Yes. Suki and others and everybody saying estimate high. Yes, estimate high. Because then when you come in faster, everyone will think you're a genius. And you might need the extra time because we've just discussed that sometimes the issues are more complex than they seem, right? Yes, and sometimes you need more time just because all of your participants are terribly busy. Yeah. People are talking about making sub-teams and sub-committees. Yes, so you can divide up the labor. Divide up the research, for example. We do that a lot. We need to go and research these issues. And we need all sides, right? And not just the side that basically agrees with us. Because we'd like to know what's going on in the world. What's the argument as we go forward, right? Right. And so we need to divide up and we need to really think about it. Yes, and keep everyone in the loop. We're going to go for efficiency also, right? Yeah. Yes, people are talking about time constraints. Sometimes you've got an artificial time constraint. Just something arbitrarily chosen, maybe by some sort of a superior in a corporation who wants to get this off their agenda, right? And wants to say it's been solved. And so they make kind of an artificial time limit. I like to know if there's some reason there's a drop-dead date, there's some reason why it must be at a certain time. Because sometimes there is. Sometimes it's not just arbitrary. Sometimes it's before the annual meeting, right? Yeah. But the annual meeting is months away from what they said the time constraint was, because they assumed that you're going to come in past time. Well, please. Let's talk this over. Let's find out what the real thing is. And we can put an artificial time constraint on it, but sometimes it won't work, right? So we need to have some flexibility. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes there is an actual deadline. Get it on the ballot. Get enough signatures by a certain date. Appear before a court that's a certain date, right? There's some reason or some sort of a bait, some sort of a presentation, something like that. There's a reason why there's a real deadline. Yeah. Yes. Liz and others are talking about making a timeline. The answer is yes if you've got a real deadline, because things have to be kept track of in an efficient manner, and everybody has to know that it's really got to be in by this date. No kidding, right? Yeah, that's the tricky part, to really get it in by this date. And so you might need a timeline, an actual timeline that everybody watches and is cognizant of and like that, because you've got a serious deadline. And if you blow it after all our work, it won't get on the ballot. It won't get on the presentation. It won't, name the problem. But it is very important to have a timeline for that and somebody to keep track. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ordinarily, I'm not that big on timelines if you don't have an actual deadline, because I think they get modified a lot and then they get useless, right? Because if you're not going to really adhere to the timeline, well, kind of what's the point, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go down to sincerity, right? Yeah. Let's do sincerity of our participants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of folk, Hussein and others, have seen that sometimes, I don't know how to say this nicer, Hussein says they're sent from the opposition as spies. Well, sometimes they kind of are. They're kind of there to disrupt things and to make sure that it doesn't go real smoothly, because they have a hidden agenda. And the agenda is, I'm not on your side, I'm on the other side. Right? Right. Yeah. And that is, first of all, so uncool. But we're going to actually break out. People are asking how to know if somebody's a spy, if they come from the opposition. Well, first of all, they're unreasonably argumentative. They don't have any enthusiasm for their tasks, right? They don't do them right. They do them wrong with a little luck, right? But we don't have time to let them muck things up for too long. Mm-hmm. So I actually take them aside and want to know what's going on. If they can be dismissed from the group, I do. I have thrown people out of my groups with some regularity. If they are important to the group for some reason, for example, they are the level of employment that must be there, right? And they're giving lip service. They're saying that they're all on board, but you can see that they're not from their actions, because actions speak louder than words, right? Mm-hmm. Let's break out the 5W questions, right? Which permeate everything the Recipe for Peace Now does, right? And the 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. So that we can get to the bottom of what's going on, and they can modify their acts, their words, their opinions, or they can recuse themselves. That's all right, too. I mean, as long as our group can go forward and reach our successful outcome, right? Yeah, that's the main thing that we want. And we don't mind an alternate viewpoint because it tells us something, tells us what else is out there, and we might modify towards it. Yeah, it's not like if you have an alternate viewpoint, we won't listen to it. We would love to listen to it, and let's consider it within the context, and maybe you got a good point there, right? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about actual foundational disagreement with the idea that something should be done, for example. Right? Yeah. And that is different. Yeah. Because certainly we don't want everybody to have the exact same views. How on earth are we going to know anything or know what's going on? Or understand what the different viewpoints are. Very important. Yes, that is not what we're talking about. We're talking about really somebody who is deliberately trying to sabotage the success of the group. Yeah. And really are not sincere as a participant. You know, this is a good point. That quite a few people are making. George and others say that they may not be insincere, but unable or inefficient. Well, I hate to admit this, or stupid, right? Some people are not so good. They may not actually be insincere, it may not be deliberate, but they are unable, inefficient, and they might be stupid. You've got to find that out. That's the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Yes. Who are you? What is your opinion? Where did you get that? Where did you hear it? When? When did you decide this? Why? Why do you think that? You see? Yeah, or permute or different modifications of that. But you want to know, what's the bottom of this? Are you insincere? Are you plain ordinary malevolent, like a spy? Are you just kind of dumb? Might be. Are you just unable? Inefficient? Yeah. Whatever. So it's sometimes things do that. And you have to know. You have to know what's going on. So we're going to ask the 5W questions. Yeah. Yeah. People are talking about unwillingness. That goes to sincerity, too. I joined this group. Oh, sometimes I have a group, right, where the people are forced to be there. Absolutely forced. And they are unwilling. They're not volunteers, right? They're forced to come because they're a certain level, for example, in an organization. I see that a lot with corporations. Yeah, I do a lot of corporate, and sometimes some sort of a supervisory level is forced to come, forced to participate. They're feeling cranky. Yeah, they're feeling unwilling. They're feeling, oh, don't wanna, right? Yeah. And they're unwilling to put in any effort. I don't have time for this. Well, we're gonna sit down and we're gonna discover how come we do. Even if I have to play teacher and I have to go, you know, I'm in charge. And this has to do with your employment, right? Right. Yes. This is a good point, too. Elizabeth and others are saying that a bad attitude is contagious and it's bad for the group dynamic. Yes, we can't have that. We're not going to have people who just crab, for example. We're going to break out the 5W questions, we're going to break out the civility rules. We're going to have a little talk with them about their employment level, right? Yeah, we are not. This is one of the reasons that groups fail. They fail because the participants are not on board. They're just not. And I'm like, yeah, that's nice. No. Bad attitude is contagious, and so is the lack of group dynamic. Let's do the next one, which is sincerity of the leader. Not us, because I know we're the leader of the team, the leader of the group, but we're not the leader who lacks sincerity. I know this because we have enthusiasm, and we're doing a very excellent job in all respects, right? Right. I'm talking about the leader above us, for example, who might have, a different agenda than we, being honest people, had assumed, right? We were wrong. They did not bring us in for the reasons that we thought, right? I have that sometimes. I'm kind of honest by nature, and I do assume that people are basically what they say they are. If they say they want something done, if they want this outcome to occur, if possible, I am on board. And I go, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's do it, right? Yeah. So I do take that at face value with a great deal of frequency. But sometimes you get brought in for unseen purposes. This is a good point that you're making. Yes. Kel says that sometimes you're brought in to fail, to prove that no one could have succeeded. And he says, everybody ever seen that? I think I have. Although, you know, it's not said, but you go, yeah, I know this because when we succeed, they're really mad. It kind of disappointed. I'm like, you know, this is a win. And they're like, ugh. Because they failed, right? They were the prior leader. And they want to prove that it wasn't because they're dumb or ineffective or bad leaders, but because nobody could have done it. And then we come in and do it as leaders. We come in and we fix it, and we get it straightened out, and we reach our successful outcome pretty much in pretty standard good time. And they're kind of disappointed because that wasn't what they brought us in for, right? If I can't do it, no one can. Look, no one can type thing. Yes. A lot of people talking about it being a power play. A lot of times it is. It's a power play. It is I am in charge type thing, and they want to micromanage. I've reached a stage in my career where I can say you can't. You can't come. You can't be in the room. You can't micromanage. You can be in the loop, but not to override my judgments. Not to kind of bog us down. Because really you want to be in charge, but you're not allowed for some reason. Probably because of the prior reason that you didn't do it right the first time and everybody hates you. I've reached the stage where I can say, no, you cannot. It's not going to be productive to the process. Yeah, the old stay away from me stage. Yeah, but it really works because sometimes it's kind of a power play, right? People are talking about revenge. I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Eric and others are talking about the fact that sometimes the leader is insincere because they brought you into something they consider impossible because you beat them at one time or another. You kind of won. I guess, yeah. I suppose that's true. Right? That goes under the category of I think I would prefer that you fail also, right? And I suppose sometimes you're brought in for revenge. I certainly hope so, because those are usually high monetary corporate things. And it's like, yes, go for it. Have revenge on me by hiring me for something really juicy. Yeah, I consider those a challenge. Mm-hmm. I don't have many people who outwardly hate me enough to do the revenge thing, but I don't know. Now, do I? I don't think I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's sincerity of the leader. Let's go for in participants. Let's go for sincerity of a public figure. And I don't know how to say this nicer, but my experience with public figures, especially politicians, and some celebrities that are very much ruled by their fans. I guess I think this about everybody who really needs public opinion and needs a vote, right? Because I live in a democratic country and we vote, and so it's important what the voters think to public figures that are politicians. Yes. All right, I'm going to make a generalization. Well, maybe I shouldn't because this is public radio. But generally speaking, I think that people who are obligated to a voter turnout, people have to vote for them, even if it's a social media vote, not necessarily even an actual vote, a ballot vote. I think people who are very, very worried about that oftentimes are swayed by public opinion. And even if they have a personal opinion, they ignore it if the public opinion is the other way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think public figures are not exactly insincere, but they'll switch on you if things get a little bit. Does that make sense? Yeah, they're kind of, fickle is an interesting word. Well, yeah, they're kind of not exactly say everything that they mean. Does that make it more palatable? Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So that's kind of my, I go in with that idea, that knowledge, that there is an underlying need on their part to, as Beth says, they want to seem good, but aren't. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe aren't is a bad thing. They want to seem good, and they will do whatever it is it takes so that they seem good to their constituents. Yeah? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's kind of you have to understand that people have a foundational need and that it needs to be accommodated. They really do. They have a foundational need, something that they really want, that they really think is important, that they really can't get past, right? Even if in private they might agree with you. You have to understand that in public is different. Mm-hmm. Because they're public figures. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people are talking about the fact that sometimes people, not only politicians, but all kinds of leaders and celebrities and like that, they make a public display, but they're privately blocking, right? Yeah. Yeah, Grace says they make a public display, but they're privately blocking. These are people who have some power, usually. And I don't like to say this just in general, but I'm going to say it just in general. Sometimes they're kind of bigots. They're kind of people with an unpleasant preconceived notion, right? Yeah, yeah, they're bigots. They're prejudiced. And they make a big public smiley display, right? Because it's popular. Yeah, and because it's the way the wind is blowing. But in private, they're blocking progress, right? They're getting together with other folk who also make the big public smiley display. And if not exactly literally hindering, actively hindering, they are for sure not helping, which is hindering, right? Yeah. So public display, but privately blocking. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too. Mm-hmm. Yes, Cheryl and others are saying that public figures will take credit if you're successful. So they made the big public display. They did nothing to help. Or else they kind of actively blocked behind the scenes. But if it's successful, they're going to come out in front of the cameras and take all the credit. Yay, team. Yeah, this is actually true. We've all seen that, yes. Mm-hmm. So let's go to the sincerity of the media. And the media, of course, influences what our public figures are going to do. Because the media tells them what's the popular way. And that's really all they want to know. They want to know what's the popular way, right? Right. So, sincerity of the media. People are saying, and it's not incorrect, Suki and others say that the citizen media, which is the internet-type media, the citizen media often has a personal agenda. That is true. Citizen media often has a personal agenda. I'm not so certain that it's only citizen media, though. I think a lot of what we would call traditional media has an agenda to it, too. Maybe not so personal, maybe it's personal, right? Anything can be presented in a way that biases the public mind, right? Yeah, especially if you're a good writer or a good presenter. And some of that does have a personal agenda. Some of it has a corporate agenda. I see corporate agenda, yeah, which is kind of personal agenda, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, and media love sensational. And if it's a quiet day, they'll kind of make something sensational. That wasn't very. And you ever see anything snowball like that? Yeah. We have kind of a government, a president like that now. You've all seen all the media about President Trump. And the media kind of, I know that he's, this is not a political statement, he's kind of a character, really, for a president, really a scary character. But the media in this country, I'm in the United States, does indeed generally portray him in a negative manner. Mm-hmm. Now, is that a personal agenda? It might be personal to the higher-ups. I don't know. But I know that it's a popular agenda. They're all pretty much doing it, at least the big media outlets. You know what I mean? I don't know about oddity kind of newslettery things. And it's creating a funny public opinion. And funny backlash on what is really kind of minutia, right? Yeah. And I know that the person, that President Trump does indeed fuel it himself too. But, yeah, it's kind of peculiar, and it's very media run. And has a sensationalism to it that's not exactly accurate to the depth of whatever it is they're sensationalizing. Does that make sense? Yeah. And yeah, sensationalism is for monetary and reputation gain, as Ada and others are saying. Yeah. Sensationalism for monetary and reputation gain. People in the media kind of like to jump in front of the camera and say something, you know. And the more sensational and the more excited they are, the more they hope that people listen to them and get lots of followers, right? Yeah. So you have to take that into account, too. And you have to give them your information in a way that they can use and make interesting, right? Yes, I'm always aware of that. People reach out to the media, and they just reach out, but they got no plan. They don't have an idea of why it is that they are reaching out, why it is that they are going, why it is that things are peculiar, right? Yeah, they're just reaching out. Well, gee. But you have to remember that. Have to remember that you have to make it interesting when you reach the media, right? Because they need to be able to use it. And they like something that's interesting or fun or poignant or whatever it is. Yeah. Yes. Yes, people are saying that all reporting is not unbiased. And this is true because it's done by human beings. And sometimes those human beings work for an organization that has an agenda, has an idea, right? Yeah. Around my town, we've got a lot of propositions that need to be voted on by the voters that do something the voters don't like. They increase taxes, right? And there's a bunch of them. And different organizations push for their funding to increase your taxes, right? Well, gee willikers. But if it's done right, the voters around here will actually do it. They will actually vote in favor of increasing their own taxes to fund something. At the moment, we've got something called Proposition 1. It is the idea that children should have greater access to the arts, as in go to shows, get buses to go to shows, that kind of stuff, which doesn't seem to be funded by the school district, even though there's lots of funding. Oh, no, never mind. Yeah, and I think it's going to pass. I'm actually in favor of it. I'm going to vote yes, even though it comes out of my pocket, because it's had a very good media campaign. All the arts organizations have gotten on board, and you know they've got some creative talent amongst them. And, yeah, and it's been presented in a way that says, look, little children will become better big adults if they have more training, more interest, more exposure to something like the arts. I don't know if that's even true or not. I don't even know if there's any scientific research on it. But it seems good. And it seems that little children should have a bus so that they can go and see the symphony during dress rehearsal. Yes. You see, it's been presented properly. Yes. And so we're all going to go and vote yes on Prop 1, and it'll take money out of our pocket yearly. And then we won't follow the funding, of course, because that's how it always is. And then there'll be a Prop 2. But anyway, yeah. So, okay. So it's a matter of presentation with the media, which influences quite a bit. So what else are we wrong about? Sometimes we're wrong about the efficiency and ability of our assistants. Right? Yeah, sometimes. Yes, this is an actual truth. Amy says sometimes they represented non-existent skills. Yeah, they said they could. And then when it comes down to it, not so much, right? Before we actually hire someone for money, and I don't know, we can because we're kind of a good organization to work for, but it is an idea. Before we hire someone for money, we ask them to volunteer for a week or so. Just volunteer, because we'd like to know if they've really got the skills that they say they do and if they will fit in nice with our team. Yeah, because people present well at an interview, and sometimes they have lovely references, but they're not the right fit. Right? It has to be the right fit. We're not that big an organization. We can't push you sideways. Yes, represented non-existent skills. I like it, Amy. Yeah, this is a good point, too, that sometimes people are so short-term that they don't gain any experience, right? We have that with interns sometimes. I like the interns to be able to stay for a year. It takes us a little while to get them up to speed. And if they're only going to be like 3 months, by the time they're really a good team member and really worth something, they're gone. I mean, and then we got another one that's kind of green, right? Yeah, I need at least a year commitment, or else we won't take an intern that's a very short term. Mm-hmm. Well, all right, rules are meant to be broken. Hello, Hussein, and how are you? Hussein actually was a very short term intern with us, but he was fabulous. So, and also, disclaimer, also, he had experience with other groups. He had experience working with us as a volunteer for a while and like that. So he wasn't just, yes, you weren't just a green, just came in the door, I'm getting class credit for this, where's the bathroom, type intern. He really hit the ground running because he could. So it's not, and it was a grant. It was a three-month grant. So sometimes, I mean, you've got rules that need to be modified, but generally speaking, if you've got interns and volunteers, they kind of need to be able to stay for a while. Mm-hmm. Because we need to put work into them. Yeah, it's a good point that Hussein says sometimes people are enthusiastic but unable. Yeah, they're enthusiastic, they're sincere. Ah, gee, but they really don't have any useful skills. Oops, they're unable. Yeah, it's not that they don't want to. They're just kind of unable. Have that. It's one of the reasons we're not all that big on volunteers. Because sometimes you get members of the community who are fabulous people, but they're just unable to do any of the tasks that we need done. Yeah, sometimes that happens. Yeah, and sometimes, you know, we repurpose them as storytellers, as good examples, as greeters. Yeah, you don't have to really have mad skills, because sometimes just being a good example of the community is a skill, right? Yeah, just enforcing the civility rules, being a model of the civility rules is a skill. Being able to hold someone's hand when they're having difficulty, that's a skill. It does. I mean, I can hire computer skills real easily. I mean, in my town, hell, they're coming out of your ears. I mean, computer skill wise. But sometimes people have skills that are much more than on the paper skills, right? We see volunteers like that. We have some lovely senior citizen volunteers, and they're fabulous people to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they are good examples of consensus building, good examples of civility rules, right? Yeah. Yes, and they're fabulous examples of the potluck. This is true. They always bring something delicious. But, yeah, so that's sometimes you need to see value and understand that value is not the same for everybody, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if they're enthusiastic but unable to do technical stuff, right, or whatever it is that we're doing, how about we have them as a cheerleader, right, as a team promoter? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about being wrong about the fact, I don't think we're getting to the food again. But we're having such a lovely conversation. And this is important stuff. Sometimes we're wrong about the facts. Remember, facts is in quotation marks, right? Mm-hmm. Anne and others are saying sometimes we have a preconceived notion that we need to change or modify. Sometimes we do. We have a preconceived notion that needs to be changed or modified. And we have to be understanding of that. And we have to realize that we've got that preconceived notion. What it is, I'm very upfront about myself. I think about myself a lot and whether I'm I've got something that's kind of a bug in my ear that shouldn't be, right? Yeah, preconceived notion ourselves, right? Yeah. And we need to change or modify it. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the crux of it, right? Mm-hmm. Muhammad says you need to know the difference between fact and opinion. Yes. Not between fact and fiction, because that's easy enough to determine in our internet world. But you need to know the difference between fact and opinion. Between fact and opinion, right? Which means that you're going to need to research all sides. A lot of times we actually break out and we assign people a different personality, a different side, so that they can really look into the validity of the position and why people think it. What kind of people are taking that position and why? Right? Yeah. And it's so we know whether we've got facts, whether we've really got opinions masquerading as facts, because sometimes it's not real obvious. It seems like something's a fact, but really, it's kind of a culturally ingrained opinion. And we didn't think about it that way. It's something we all know. It seems like a fact. But it kind of ain't. Yeah. The difference between facts and opinion. You need to research it. A lot of times there's false assumptions. People are talking about false assumptions. And we got to think about that. Because, you know, your assumptions form the basis of your, well, all right, it's an opinion, not a fact, right? But let's work that through. Let's think about it. What's our foundational assumption here? Is it right? Or is it, well, maybe not wrong completely, but do we need to think about modifying for a minute here? Yes, sometimes, and Thomas and others are talking about deliberate deception. Sometimes something is presented to you as a fact, and it's a deliberate deception. It's not a fact at all. It's barely an opinion. It's kind of, how shall I put this delicately, a lie, right? And that needs to be found out. That needs to be researched. That needs to be questioned. Yes. Mm-hmm. The last topic is wrong. Oh, yeah, we're not going to make the recipes. I apologize. We'll do them next time. You say that every week, don't I? Well, okay, next time I'll pick a shorter topic. Yes, people are going, well. If you want to see prior recipes, but you're going to have to go back like 3 weeks because we've kind of held these in a little while. Sorry about that. All the shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. We were wrong about the expert expertise. Yeah, I don't stop the show in an arbitrary spot and then retake it up the next week. I think it breaks the show, even if we don't get to the recipes. People are saying maybe I should stop the show at a certain point and then do the recipes and then take up the show the next week. I think that's kind of confusing to people that didn't hear the prior show. Yeah. And then they get kind of out of sync. Yeah, it's been tried. It's kind of weird because it makes for kind of a weird false start to a show. So we just kind of don't do the recipes if we run out of time. Oops, and we're going to. My apologies. So let's do wrong about the expert's expertise, right? A lot of you are saying sometimes they exaggerate their abilities and they don't really know as much as it seemed. I like to have a reference, maybe more than one, for an expert that I'm not familiar with. Somebody I trust says that they used them and they were good, right? Yeah. And then I ask kind of what was the topic, because sometimes it's a little bit peripheral. It's not exactly, and it's like, oh, I don't know. Is that the same? Yeah, I like a real personal contact to find out if their expertise is being exaggerated. This is a good point, too. Alex and others are talking about getting more than one expert opinion. Yes, especially if the issues are fairly complex. I like to get expert opinions from all sides because there's experts on all sides, and they must have a reason for their opinion. Let's see what everybody's reasoning is. Let's see what they all, if there's a common thread, if we can reach consensus, if we can reach out, right? Yeah. And why is there such a divergence, right? Yes. I like to know the basis. I do ask the 5W questions. I ask them constantly, come to think of it. But I ask them of experts especially, because I want to know if we're going to rely on your expertise, who, what, where, when, and why. Yeah, what's the foundation? What's your, you don't have to have a bunch of degrees, a bunch of college, bunch of educational degrees for me to think that you're an expert. And even if you do have a bunch of degrees and stuff, it doesn't necessarily make you an expert in my mind or one I care to connect with. Until I know the foundation for your opinion. Who, what, where, when, and why? Yes, and this is a good point, too, that sometimes in your participants pool, your participants are experts. Somebody might have some expertise, but they don't know that it's welcome. I always say, if you've got something that you know, please tell us. Yeah, we want to know. We want to know seriously. Yes. So expertise is very important, and it could be right with you, right there. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here and for all of your participation. If you'd like to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.